Welcome to the Michaud Mission. Two men, one podcast, every black film ever made. My name is Len, a.k.a. The Bat Tribble. As always, I'm joined by my partner.
Hey, this is Vincent Williams.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to you live on a very special evening. On a Monday night.
Monday.
But still coming from our loyal home of Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace. Vincent and I are back for the first time in November.
Yes.
To present The Bards of November.
The Bards of November.
Adaptations of Shakespeare works all throughout the month.
Absolutely.
And we are starting things in 1995 with Lawrence Fishburne and Kenneth Branagh in the film adaptation of William Shakespeare's Othello.
Othello the Moor.
Vincent's selection. Tonight's stop on the Michaud Mission.
Good way to start the conversation this month.
Most definitely. Shout out to each and every one of you out there who are watching us live as we stream to YouTube and Facebook and all streams, north, south, east, and west. Shout out to each and every one of you out there who are watching us and saying hello in the chat. Hello, missionaries.
Good evening, one and all.
Vincent?
Yes, sir.
It's been a minute since we've been together.
Yes, sir.
A couple of things have passed. Halloween has passed. Did you have a fun Halloween?
Fun Halloween. Went and did a little trick-or-treating. As my son's not really a big trick-or-treater, but we went out and spent about an hour, and then he was like, okay,
I've done it. An hour? That was it?
About an hour. Maybe a little over an hour. He's like, all right, I've done this.
Okay.
So.
And then you had a birthday.
I did have a birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you, sir.
How was your birthday? How'd you spend your
birthday? It was a good birthday. You know, I went out, had dinner.
Yeah.
Talked to family.
That's nice.
You know, quiet birthday. You know, it was during the week, so.
Well, that was very nice. But
yeah, very quiet birthday. Kind that I like.
Well, yeah, that's what's up.
Absolutely.
All right.
And how are you?
I'm sick.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
If you are watching us live, ladies and gentlemen, you'll see that Vincent has a nice little comfortable sweatshirt on.
I do.
I have three sweatshirts on.
Yeah.
And a hat.
Yeah.
Because I am coming down with a cold.
Yeah.
Actually a cold has come down on me.
Right.
I've taken a test. It's not COVID.
Well, that's good to know.
It's not COVID, but it is a bad cold. And I wanted to power through.
Power through. Just for the missionaries.
Just for you.
That's right. That's dedication.
You.
That's dedication.
All right.
We're going to keep it moving.
Yes.
Keep it going. We're going to get through. Get you home. Get some chicken soup.
Yes.
Said you're going to get some. Here's some free advertising. You said you're going to get some chicken soup from Wawa. Yeah, I am flabbergasted every time I get chicken noodle soup from Wawa. Just how good it is.
I know. It's not bad, right?
It's ridiculously good.
Yeah. So I figure that's what I'll get.
That's not a bad thing to get.
We've been going for a little bit, which means that we have emails.
We do.
Or in other words,
we have missives from the missionaries.
So what else is going on, Lynn?
We have emails, Vincent.
Ooh, missives from the missionaries.
Email number one, Vincent.
Email number one.
We heard from Callie, that Oakland lady.
Hey, Callie.
Hello, Len and Vincent. I hope this finds you well.
Thank you.
I just finished your review of The Blackening.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And I agree. You have to see it with a crowd. As someone who went to an HBCU, I think this would be a fun homecoming movie for those of us who can't hang with Generation Z or don't want to.
Right.
Callie says, I went with HBCU grads and we saw conversations we had in the dorms and many of the jokes just reminded us that we all had the same experience. One particular moment was the Friends joke and we all went, who watched that?
Right.
Living single always, which is very true.
Yes.
And while we joke, and while the joke was predictable, it literally copied our exact sentiment. I haven't watched it alone, and I probably wouldn't, but I would 100% watch again with my old HBCU dorm mates because we are going to laugh and be sent down memory lane. Let me also add that I'm from East Oakland.
Okay.
Bit was so real because as someone from East Oakland, I said that exact thing. Hope you both enjoy your trick-or-treat candies. Callie.
Thank you, Callie. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, yeah, very much a communal experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell, and there are certainly movies like that that have become communal experiences, which, you know, in a lot of ways is the true badge of honor when we talk about longevity in films. And you know, you think about something like, you know, Coming to America,
mm-hmm.
or even I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, where, you know, they have these bits that have, or Friday.
Friday.
Like you and I talked extensively about how Friday is a film that even if you've never seen Friday, you've absolutely seen Friday.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Callie. From East Oakland.
Another email.
All right.
From Robert Kaplowitz.
Hey, what's up, Robert?
In regard to Len's second list of black vampires.
Okay.
Gents,
mm-hmm.
While I can personally neither confirm nor deny Iman's vampiric immortality,
mm.
I can share a story that may have an impact on your beliefs. My dear friend, rest in power, Luckman Brown, was the front man for the black punk band Funk Face.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this band?
I am not.
One gig, the most beautiful couple in the world was sitting at a table not far from the stage, and Luck, being as punk as he was, decided to stage dive right onto them.
Okay.
And I'm assuming this couple, he means Iman
and David Bowie.
David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I think he felt like their uptown polish had no business at a downtown punk show.
Sure.
Now Luck wasn't Andre the Giant, but I'm pretty sure he clocked in north of 200 pounds.
Okay.
And as Luck told me, Iman didn't bat an eye,
mm-hmm.
or even uncross her legs.
Yeah.
It was like she didn't even know he had landed on her.
Yeah.
The Velvet Duke, on the other hand, leaned in and said, get the F off my wife.
I know that's right.
And that's the only thing that he should have said.
Yeah.
This is a true and attested history. I'm pretty sure Greg Tate even wrote it up. Anyhow, Iman, I'm betting she'll still be here as gorgeous and powerful as ever when the next Ziggy Stardust finds his way to Earth in a couple of more centuries.
Okay.
Your fan, Robert Kaplowitz.
Thank you, Robert. That's a great story. That's a great story. That's
an excellent story.
Yeah, yeah.
That is dope. All right. And what email would be complete,
mm-hmm.
without a missive from Michael Sykes?
What's up, Michael?
In regard to that man, Shaft. Hello, Vincent and Len. I hope you all had a great Halloween break.
Mm-hmm.
I was sad to hear Richard Roundtree passed away.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember my first time watching Shaft from 1971 on TNT.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time at 6 years old. It was a phenomenal experience for me because it was the first time a black hero was on screen. I mean, yes, I've seen Meteor Man and Blank Man, but they were jokes compared to John Shaft. Even as a six-year-old, I knew Meteor Man and Blank Man was a joke, nothing to take seriously.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, watching the opening credits made me take him more seriously. This is a man, unlike Blank Man, who had a theme song, who instantly demanded respect, and who is a ladies' man.
Yes.
We get this cool black hero. He's selling masculinity and strength, and it changed the game. He's not a pimp, hustler, or drug dealer, but a detective who is about helping his people and the community. He represented a black masculinity that is still indoors to this day and is all for a lot of people and forever will be. He was not afraid to take on his enemies, who never gave his actions a second thought and never showed fear. Shaft was all masculine and didn't take anything from anyone. This was the first black superhero with swag. I can't say the same for Meteor Man or Blank Man. Not only that, but the soundtrack spoke for itself. The soundtrack paved the way for 70s blaxploitation soundtracks and more black soundtracks that would soon come, such as Superfly, The Mac, Claudine, Sparkle, Black Caesar, Car Wash, Let's Do It Again, and more. I believe, in my honest opinion, the character, Josh Shaft, paved the way for great, cool black detectives on TV and the big screen, such as...
All right, conserve your energy over there.
Will Smith as Mike Lowry from Bad Boys. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Philip Michael Thomas as Detective Ricardo Tubbs from mm-hmm. Miami Vice. Mm-hmm. Malik Yopa as Detective J.C. Williams in New York Undercover. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Keenan Ivory Wayans as Shame in Low Down Dirty Shame. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Fishburne as Russell Stevens in Deep Cover. Mm-hmm. Wesley Snipes as John Cutter in Passenger 57. What's the line?
Always bet on black.
And Chadwick Boseman, King T'Challa, as Black Panther. Richard Roundtree got paid $50,000 for Shaft big score, which was more than what Al Pacino got paid for being in The Godfather. He represents everything important at that moment in time. Gordon Parks and Isaac Hayes are Mr. Roundtree's image, which reflects the culture so that we could gaze lovingly on our image and see how beautiful we all are. And for that, he will be missed.
Well, that is certainly a great obituary. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a real loss. I have to say, just to add to that, I am a fan of Richard Roundtree's later performances as he got a little older.
Yes.
Like he was on at least one episode of Rock mm-hmm. as Rock's uncle. And I joke all the time about how on the amazingly underrated Being Mary Jane.
Okay.
He and Margaret Avery played Gabrielle Union's character's parents. Mm-hmm. And I think they had to pull back on them.
I'm sure.
Because they were going to steal the show. I'm sure. So, yeah, it's a real loss. Real loss.
Real loss.
Glad we have so much of him on screen, though.
Black Star Signature Podcast, Many Lumens, hosted by me, Mayori Carmel Holmes, is back with all new episodes featuring groundbreaking artists, change makers, and cultural workers. Join us as we find meaning in the intersections of art, social change, and popular culture. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast or at manylumens.com.
All right, that is our emails, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
We're going to continue.
Keep the train moving.
Move. Top five.
All right.
Top five. Who's your top five?
Top five, ladies and gentlemen. My top five is where I give a list and talks about it. And this list, believe it or not, it's in theme, even though it has nothing to do with Shakespeare.
Oh, I'm intrigued. Yes.
Because this top five mm-hmm. is top five cradle to the cane stars, black actors who got their start as children.
Okay. Okay.
Of a kind, but would go on to still garner success as adult actors.
Okay. Okay. And so this is a reference, of course.
This is a reference, of course, to number five.
Okay.
Who is Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes.
Who not only is the star of our film tonight, Othello, mm-hmm. but who was, before 1993, who was credited as Larry Fishburne. Mm-hmm. He's a three-time Emmy Award and Tony Award winning actor, known for his roles on stage and screen. And you know him from The Matrix, Boys in the Hood.
Quicksilver. No one knows him from Quicksilver.
Nobody knows him from
Quicksilver. I know him from
Quicksilver. However, mm-hmm. his most memorable childhood role.
Oh, interesting. I'm interested to see what you say, which one is his most memorable.
Well, he had two memorable childhood mm-hmm. roles.
Yeah.
He actually started acting in front of the camera in 1972 at the age of 11. Mm-hmm. He received positive reviews for his first acting role in the initial ABC Theater teleplay, If You Give a Dance, You Gotta Play the Band. Soon after, he portrayed Joshua Hall on One Life to Live. But then he would go on to star or be a player role of a young boy who witnessed the police shooting of a popular high school basketball star in Cornbread, Earl and Me.
Yes.
He then later appears in a supporting role in Apocalypse Now.
That's right.
Where he plays 17-year-old gunner's mate third class from the Bronx named Mr. Clean. However, at the time of that production, Larry Fishburne was actually only 14 years old.
I was about to say, yeah.
He had lied about his age to appear in that film. So Lawrence Fishburne, a lot of people don't know, is actually a child actor.
Yeah.
And that's where he got his start.
Yeah.
A huge start. The thing that he was in Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
And he's still killing it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So Lawrence Fishburne.
All right. Number five. Interested to see who the other four. I assume you're just doing them in random order. Yeah, you're not doing them in order of success.
No. Because.
Right. It seems like you'd land on Lawrence Fishburne. Yeah.
Wait, though.
Oh, but there's
an argument to be possibly made. I still would lean your way, though.
Right.
Number four. Made her acting debut in Barbershop 2. Back in business in 2004.
Okay.
That will be none other than Kiki Palmer.
Kiki Palmer.
Who would later appear in her breakthrough starring role in Aquila and the Bee.
Yes.
In 2006, a film that we have reviewed and loved.
And yeah. She was in with who?
She was in with Lawrence Fishburne.
With Lawrence Fishburne. Look at you. Playing a little 6 degrees.
How you gonna? There you go.
Mm-hmm.
She would go on and still continue garnering the success as a child actress in Madea's Family Reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you take what you get. Jump In, The Long Shot, Shrink. She played a number of roles on Nickelodeon, as well as the title character on the sitcom True Jackson,
VP.
Providing the voice of Aisha on The Winx Club and headlining the television show Rags. But of course, as an adult, she has gone on to huge success in film Animals, Hustlers, and as most recently in Jordan Peele's Nope.
Yes, sir.
2022. So Kiki Palmer continuing to have blossoming success as an adult actor.
Kiki Palmer. We all love Kiki Palmer.
Number three. Began his career as a child actor, making several appearances on Saturday Night Live, Little Bill, and Sesame Street. This would be none other than Tyler James Williams.
Yeah.
Who rose to prominence playing the role of Chris Rock on the UPN CW sitcom, Everybody Hates Chris. He can now be seen as an adult as Gregory Eddy on the ABC sitcom Abbott Elementary.
Yeah.
For which he has gained critical acclaim as well as nominations for an Emmy. And for some people, the next time they saw him after Everybody Hates Chris, because he kind of like grew up on that show a little bit.
Yeah.
Was he had a prominent role on The Walking Dead for a few years.
Right, right. But then they killed him, right? Because he was black.
I think they killed him because they kill people.
Now, and let's see how long we can go with this. We can connect him to Nope in Jordan Peele because one of my favorite appearances of Tyler James Williams right before Abbott Elementary started was, remember we were talking a few weeks ago about Jordan Peele's sensibilities with comedy and horror and how I said he kind of cut his teeth with some episodes of Key and Peele.
Yes.
There is a fantastic episode. We actually referenced it when you talked about redoing a show. There's a wonderful bit on Key and Peele where the conceit is Urkel is basically the kid from It's a Good Life.
Oh.
And it's like this horror skit, and Tyler James Williams plays Urkel.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, look that up on your Google of choice.
I will. Number two. Received various accolades including 2 Primetime Emmy Awards and a Golden Globe Award. It was named in 2022 one of the 100 most influential people in the world.
Oh my goodness.
Born and raised in Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
She made her television debut in 2010 on the Disney Channel as Rocky Blue on the sitcom Shake It Up.
Okay.
And then starred as the titular character in the channel sitcom Casey Undercover. That would be none other than Zendaya.
Yeah, Zendaya. Yeah, oh yeah.
Who made her feature film debut in 2017, the superhero film Spider-Man Homecoming. She has since gone on to garner huge accolades.
Yes, sir.
And an Emmy Award for the teen drama series Euphoria on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And she could also be seen doing great work in the musical The Greatest Showman,
mm-hmm.
Dune, and the romantic drama Malcolm and Marie,
which I still have not seen.
It's an interesting movie.
Figure we're going to see it.
Yeah.
A whole bit.
Are you a Zendaya fan?
I am. I really like Zendaya.
Me too.
I cannot link her to Jordan Peele and everything that we've been doing so far.
Me neither.
Well, you.
Yes.
You just are not. This is, we just, let's go. This is
number one.
Let's just power through.
Number one, best known.
Number one.
Making his
Boy, I wish this was a movie where I wish I knew you and I were definitely going to disagree about it, because I'd bulldoze all over your ass tonight. Tell you're a mess right now.
Number one broke out in television.
Uh-huh.
Playing Wallace in the first season of the HBO crime drama series The Wire.
Yes, sir.
We'll go on to play Reggie Montgomery on the ABC soap opera All My Children.
Yeah.
And Vince Howard in the NBC sports drama series Friday Night Lights.
He was so good in Friday Night Lights.
This would be none other than Michael B. Jordan. Best known making his breakout film role as a shooting victim, Oscar Grant, in the drama Fruitvale Station.
Mm-hmm.
And then appearing as Adonis Creed in Creed 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as Eric Killmonger
mm-hmm.
in Black Panther.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Love Michael B. Jordan. Good list.
Good list right there.
Good list. Yeah, we of course have to do an honorable mention for the great Kim Fields.
We do. The only reason I didn't do Kim Fields is because she never made it into movies.
Right.
But of course, I mean, you could go Kim Fields. You could go her mother.
Oh, Chip Fields.
Chip Fields. She did some like teen roles.
I don't like to talk about Chip Fields though.
That gets too close to the bone.
I'm still scared of Chip Fields.
Tell her why, Vincent.
Oh, of course, because she plays Penny's birth mother on Good Times. Penny's abusive birth mother who burned her with an iron.
Yes, she did.
Penny went and ran for the door, and she just kept ironing. And she said, I locked the door because I knew that's where you were going to go. Then she unhooked the cord from the iron, and I said, oh, no, she's going to beat Penny with the cord. That is terrible. But then she put the cord down.
And he said, no, mama.
No, mama. Please, mama. No, mama. No, mama. And then she burned up Penny with an iron.
And Penny was played by Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson.
This is why Black America has a soft spot for Janet Jackson.
That's right.
Because in our mind, she still has an iron mark on her back.
That's right. So, yeah, I don't really do a whole lot of stuff with Chip Fields.
Okay.
I talk real low about Chip Fields. Okay. You don't want to summon her. We don't want no problems with you.
You've already said her name about twice.
Ms. Fields, sorry.
Slow down.
Mm-hmm.
George Carmona is in the chat talking about how we're going to forget Michael B. Jordan's performance as Johnny Storm.
Because he paid us to forget.
Yes. He paid it all, everybody, he for paid it to everybody. Go away.
You didn't get your Johnny Storm check?
All right. Let's move. 6 degrees.
Make sure you cough that way too, because I don't want it.
6 degrees of Derville, Mark.
All right.
I got two pairs of socks on, three sweatshirts, long john. Let's sweat that out. All right. Where are we? 6 degrees of Derville Martin. That's where we are. I was testing you. keeping it in theme. This is where I give actors to Vincent, and he has to connect them in 6 movies or less to Derville Martin,
mm-hmm, the original Shakespearean actor.
Okay, whatever. So, mm-hmm, keeping it in theme.
Yes,
these are white actors, mm-hmm, who started as children.
Okay,
and continue to success.
Okay,
as adults in film. And in television.
Okay.
But did have success in film.
But did have success in film. Okay. Who we got? Number one, white child actor who didn't grow up.
This would be Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes. Okay. So Neil Patrick Harris.
Doogie Howser himself.
And when I think about him in the movies, so he's in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Playing himself.
Neil Patrick Harris is also in
a movie that I'm pretty sure you saw fairly recently in 2021. And it's a good role. It's not like a... And it's not a voice.
So... what else is he in? Like, do that away from the mic.
George Komoda said somebody get him some Vicks.
Yeah.
I got Ricola.
Ricola.
Berry flavor.
I can't think of anything he's in besides
Harold and Kumar?
Yeah, in the movies.
Oh, this movie you've seen. I think you've seen it.
What is it?
The Matrix Resurrections.
Is he in The Matrix Resurrections?
Yeah. He's like the antagonist.
Neil Patrick Harris? Oh, the Matrix Resurrections. Right, the one. Okay. Oh, that's too bad because I was... Oh, well, I'll still use them. So, Derville Martin is in... Sheba Baby with Pam Grier. Pam Grier is in Hitman with Bernie Casey. Bernie Casey is in Cornbread, Earl and Me with Lawrence Fishburne. Lawrence Fishburne is in, let's just say, The Matrix with Keanu Reeves, who was in The Matrix Resurrection with Neil Patrick Harris. I sure did forget he was in that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
He's been in a few movies that I'm sure you've seen. I see Farrah Blackwell saying, what movie was he in with Whoopi Goldberg? That would be Clara's Heart.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
But he was also in, these are films that I think you've seen.
Okay.
Starship Troopers.
How did I forget about him in Starship Troopers? I love Starship Troopers.
Just that easily. Undercover Brother.
Oh, yeah, I'm tripping. He's in a couple of things I like.
He was in a couple of things he did voices on that I know you've seen, but I'm not going to go there.
Sure.
He was in Gone Girl. Did you see Gone Girl?
You know what? I've never seen Gone Girl.
That's not a bad movie.
Yeah, that's where I hear.
And I think you saw this, the Nicolas Cage movie, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Didn't you see?
I didn't see it. I didn't get to it. Yeah. All right. But okay. Neil Patrick Harris. Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris. Yeah. He's made a nice transition.
He has.
Yeah.
God bless him. All right.
Who else we got?
Number two. Child actor. Six movies or less. Connect Dervil Martin. Two. Christina Ricci.
Oh, Christina Ricci. We'll just go real fast and keep it moving because Dervil Martin is, of course, in Five on the Black Hand side with Dick Anthony Williams, who is in Mo' Better Blues with Samuel Jackson, who's in Black Snake Moan with Christina Ricci.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Well done, Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's how it's done.
And we're keeping it moving.
So, next, we're getting to our movie review.
Right. We're actually going to review them. That's what we do.
It's time for our time for our review, 1995's Othello.
We'll be right back with our movie review after we step to these messages.
In 1963, in Americus, Georgia, 15 black girls joined a protest.
One for the matinee, please.
Negroes, get your tickets in the back.
We just want tickets to see the show.
Here comes a whole mess of tickets for each and every one of you.
No.
Based on a true story, Push Black presents The Stolen Girls of Americus. Listen and follow on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcast.
In a time of heroes, there was but one great general. His bravery in battle was legendary. His devotion to his love, unchallenged. His name was Othello. Under the cover of darkness, and against her father's will, he took Desdemona into his heart. The great general and his true love were secretly wed. Some men die for glory. Some men fight for love. One man lives for revenge. His was the soul of a traitor. And the opportunity he seized would change their lives forever.
Oh, beware, my lord of jealousy. Look to your wife. Observe her well with Cassio.
If she be false, I'll not believe it.
Castle Rock Entertainment is proud to present Lawrence Fishburne, Irene Jacob, and Kenneth Branagh.
Strangle her in her bed.
Othello.
The 1995 drama based on William Shakespeare's tragedy of the same name. It was directed by Oliver Parker. It stars Lawrence Fishburne as Othello. Irene Jacob in her first English-speaking role as Desdemona. And Kenneth Branagh as Iago.
Honest Iago.
This is, in fact, one of the first cinematic reproductions of the play released by a major studio that casts an African-American actor to play the role of Othello, even though there were notes of that there were low-budget productions that did have a black person
mm-hmm.
in the cast. The film features a script that is spoken, is mostly the Shakespeare's play, but it has been adapted and kind of like remixed by Oliver Parker,
mm-hmm.
the writer and director
mm-hmm.
of the film. And while it was released with two largely positive reviews, it was not a success
mm-hmm.
on its release in 1995. But that doesn't mean that it is not worth exploring here sure. on the Michaud Mission. So with that in mind, we turn things over to our learned professor here at the Michaud Mission, one Vincent Williams. Vincent,
mm-hmm.
what say thee of Othello?
Well, just to front load the review, this is easily the best film version of Othello.
Major film version.
Major film, or just film, you're right, film version. Like, I'm not counting, people kind of putting the play on the screen.
Okay.
Like people do to play a new, as a film. This is, the best film version. But as we talk about this, I think what you kind of see is that that's a pretty low bar to clear, because Othello has historically been a tough nut to crack.
Okay.
To put on the screen. I think the main reason that when we think of the major Shakespeare plays, and by the major plays, the ones that everyone knows, Hamlet, Macbeth, Romeo and Juliet, King Lear, this has not gotten as many film adaptations as you would think a major Shakespeare play would get. And right at the center of it, I think, is this third rail of race.
Yes.
The fact that Othello, the Moor, the story that is Othello, and he is a Moorish general who goes and ends up, almost in a mercenary role, heads the military for Venice. And he's appointed the head of the Venetian army. He has his trusted lieutenant, Iago,
Do you mean his trusted Lieutenant Cassio?
No, I mean his trusted Lieutenant Iago. But then when he's appointed the head of the Venetian army, instead of saying, Iago, you will remain as my number two, he appoints Cassio, who is a Venetian soldier. And this sets up Iago's plot, because Iago feels like he has been slighted.
Right.
Also, he marries the daughter of a senator of a politician in Venice, and the plot revolves around Iago seeking revenge because he feels he's been slighted professionally, and there's a bit of a subtext, depending on what version you see, where Iago also feels like Othello may have slept with his wife.
Oh.
His wife being Iago's wife. So this
Amelia.
Amelia. So this plot, where in the center you have this relationship between this black man and this white woman, historically has been one that audiences don't want to deal with. So it's been hard to get it filmed. As you said, 1995. You said this is one of the is there another one?
Well, it's the first one by a major studio.
Has there been one since?
Well, not since, but there were low budget performances.
Right. What I'm saying, when we talk about a major studio film version of Othello, 1995, as you said, was the first one with a black lead.
And there hasn't been one
since. And there has not been one since. So right from the beginning, when you talk about this being the best version of this story, again, it's not a lot of competition. Having said that, you know, there are a lot of parts of this film that I like. First and foremost, I think the thing about Othello that, again, I think made it difficult to put on screen in front of Western audiences, and American audiences in particular, this is a story about sex.
Yes.
And I love the fact that this film centers the sexual aspect of this plot. Like, this relationship between Othello and Desdemona is primarily a sexual one. And I think you get two or three scenes in this film with Othello and Desdemona. One of the major changes that they made to the story is that when Othello suspects that she's cheating on him with Cassio, the film shows Othello's imagination. And when he imagines them together, he imagines them together sexually. Like, this is not, you know, Cassio's not giving her flowers and reading her poetry.
Nothing romantic.
This is about sex. And I think this is something that many filmmakers and many even play directors tiptoe around, that they do well in here. We can talk about whether or not Lawrence Fishburne as Othello makes a good Othello, but he looks good. Like, he looks good. This is 1995. This is 3 years after a film that you and I both really enjoyed his performance in, Deep Cover.
Yep.
And this is that Lawrence Fishburne. He is lean. He looks good. And again, this is a sexualized man that you get why someone would be attracted to him. The secret of Othello, and it's not even a secret, Othello is never about who plays Othello.
Nope.
Othello is always about who plays Iago. And Kenneth Branagh is good in this. I think this is, like, when I think about Kenneth Branagh in Shakespearean films, this is not my favorite. Like, I love him in Henry V.
Right.
And I think he's really good in Hamlet. But Kenneth Branagh gets Iago. And I think he's good as Iago. The film looks good, you know, filmed on location in Italy. So you get a real sense of place in these castles, and it feels like they've gone. So I love the costumes.
Yeah, taken back in time.
I love the costumes. I love Othello's costume as the Moor. I think so many times when you see Othello costuming, oftentimes I think it gets a little silly. Like I think a lot of times in a lot of adaptations and a lot of plays when they do Othello, you know, can look a little clownish with the head wraps and the jewelry. It's like
they play it over the top.
Right, it's over the top because he's the Moor. Where I thought there was a level of restraint. I thought there was a level of nuance, you know, even with something like, it's not quite a costume, but there are several times when Othello gets out of bed and has to come, and the way he wraps a sheet around him, lets you know that this is a man from a different place.
A different culture.
So that part of it, I like. So like I said, there's a certain, as you said, this is Irene Jacobs' first performance in English.
Yes.
And she's not really, you know, she's a little awkward in her phraseology. And there's always been a level of criticism that Lawrence Fishburne isn't quite as comfortable getting around the Shakespearean speech. I didn't mind either one of them. And as far as Lawrence Fishburne, it's actually in the play that Othello says, I'm not a wordsmith. Like, I'm not an eloquent man. So even that kind of goes into it. So again, a lot about this adaptation as a film adaptation that I liked. Having said that, you know, I have notes. You know, there were parts of the film that I thought, you know, I thought weren't quite as sharp.
Okay.
I thought it should have been. First and foremost, I think Nathaniel Parker's Cassio.
Yes.
Does fine. But there's no real eloquent way to really say this. He's not really good looking enough to be Cassio.
Oh, really?
Cassio has got to be a golden, glorious dude.
Okay.
Like, the whole Cassio thing is that Othello chooses Cassio as his lieutenant instead of Iago because of the optics. Like I've been hired. Like, I'm the head of the Venetian army. I'm like hot shit now. So I need the hotness next to me, which is Cassio. There's also, and we'll talk about this dynamic between the two actors who play Othello and Desdemona, but you also need somebody that is believable that Othello is a little self-conscious about. Like when Iago kind of floats your wife is cheating on you with this dude. This has to be a dude that looks like somebody might cheat on 1995 Lawrence Fishburne with.
And that's the point. Because I actually think Cassio he's nice looking enough. But he doesn't have next to Lawrence Fishburne 1995.
Right. And we can talk about old Venetian racism and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But if you are going to convince me that my wife might be cheating on me, and I look like Lawrence Fishburne in 1995.
You need 1995 Brad Pitt.
I have said for years, Brad Pitt in A River Runs Through It is who needs to play Cassio.
Yep.
Like, you need this golden kind of pretty boy playing Cassio.
Golden child.
Yes. I feel like Iago's motivations aren't as sharp as they should be. Like I feel like so much of, and frankly, I feel like this about a lot of the film, that the motivations that kind of drive everyone in this film, the film assumes that you know coming in.
Because you know
the story.
Yeah.
But I really needed more of Iago underlining the fact that he has been slighted.
Right.
Like, he has actually been slighted. And there needs to be some energy where he's like, I don't know what the deal is with my wife and Othello, which I'll get to that in a moment. So there's that. At the time, well, not at the time, because I guess it's still the same. Lawrence Fishburne, the actor, is, I believe, 4 years older than Irene Jacob, the actress. When you look at them on the screen, they look like they're about the same age. Othello's got to be older than Desdemona. Like, as much as we talk about the black-white thing, this is also a matter of age that Othello feels some kind of way. The cheat code to the whole play. So when the play starts, Othello has eloped with Desdemona. Desdemona's father doesn't know what's happening. Desdemona's had a suitor, Rodrigo. And Iago is manipulating Rodrigo like he does everyone. He manipulates Rodrigo to say, go wake up her father to let him know that she's run off. And when he yells up there, he says, an old black ram is nupping your young white you. And we all focus on the black and white. And we also focus on the nupping, which when you look it up, it's a very graphic euphemism for sex. Because he also says they're making the beast with two backs. So again, these people aren't making love. This is about fucking. Right. And it's very graphic and everything that goes along with it. But he also says, This is an old black ram. And part of the reason that her father is caught so off guard is because Desdemona is young. Like if you just sort of follow the logic of the play, like you get the sense she's had a fair amount of suitors. You know, 16, maybe 16, she has a, like she's, you know, in my mind, Desdemona should be around 18, 19 years old. In the play, Iago is 28, and he talks about Othello being an older man. So in my mind, like for me, like you have, people have different interpretations, and everyone kind of settles on between 10, 20 years. I'm a 20-year man. Like, I feel like Othello should be a solid 20 years older.
Okay, but that is if you're casting the play. This is an adaptation.
No, but see, this is part of the plot. Again, if you were telling me that Cassio is cheating, that Cassio has cuckolded me, and that my wife is sleeping with Cassio,
right?
Part of what makes me self-conscious about all this is that Cassio is 25, and I'm 40.
Okay.
And this is old-timey 40. So there's that. Also, and this really gets to the meat of where I think the play doesn't hold together.
The play or the movie?
I'm sorry, the movie doesn't really hold together. Othello has to be an older man, and Desdemona has to be young, because this is a real sketchy situation. Like, I think you really got to underline just how sketchy this thing is. Othello says, I will come to you, being her father. We would hang out. You would ask me about my life because I'm a warrior and I have all these great stories about being war. I noticed that your daughter is in the background listening. So as I'm talking to you, I'm really talking to her. And the sentiment, or rather the sense you get is that these two have been sneaking around. And then they elope and get married. But the play, you get this one shot of Desdemona listening to Othello. But I think you really got to underline that these two people are sketchy people, so that it makes sense that Othello doesn't trust her. As he says, or rather as Desdemona's father says, she lied to me, and I'm her father. She'll lie to you too. And that really is the foundation of all of this, because what you have is that Iago is really taking advantage of these spaces that were already there. And that's how a successful production of Othello works. But without hitting all of these notes more sharply, you know, again, you get the sense that the film thinks that the audience knows this stuff, so I don't have to hit it so hard. I do think it doesn't gel as strongly as it should. So while I still land on liking it, I feel like there's a much better version of this film that could pretty easily be made.
Well, I agree with that, because while I'm not as familiar with the play itself, Othello, I, of course, just because of over the time, know the story. And with that, I did feel that the movie thinks that you know everything. Like, there is a 15-minute short of previously on Othello that you should watch before you see this movie. Because without any of that, you really feel that Iago's major motivation is just trying to help out Rodrigo, who you then get the sense, well, he seems like he's trying to help the dude, but he's also trying to play the dude. So which way is this going? You know what I mean? And I don't know if I ever really, before I read it, landed on Iago being skipped over for Cassio mm-hmm. at that point. There was a jealousy. And I think there may have been some words to it, but I don't know if I really landed on it until I read it afterwards. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, so this is why he.
Right. Right.
It's going after him so much. I don't mind. As, like you say, like, you know, she should be younger. He should be older or whatever. I think, honestly, that while Lawrence Fishburne and Irene Jacob look about the same age, his demeanor is such that he feels sufficiently, if not older, more experienced than her.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, they're, that dichotomy didn't bother me. I don't know. My thing is, though, I don't know if I buy their chemistry.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're both very talented actors and they're doing well. I, maybe because I'm not so versed in Shakespeare, didn't think they did bad with the language.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fine for me. But I just didn't think their chemistry was such. And honestly, they weren't bad. The problem is that they're acting against Kenneth Branagh, who speaks Shakespeare. He wakes up speaking Shakespeare. Right. So,
right.
You know, that man, like, you know, like he dreams in Shakespeare.
Right.
And he's just having so much fun.
Yeah.
And the director is rightfully so. Like you said, Othello is about Othello in name only. It's all about Iago.
Mm-hmm.
And Iago is, he's talking to, he's scheming and plotting. He's letting us know about the scheme and the plot. He's breaking the third, you know, like the fourth wall. And I like that. There were things that just didn't 100% connect. Him, Othello having epilepsy and going into these, you know, these fits. I dug it. I saw what was happening. It still looked weird the first time you saw it. I was like, what the hell is happening to the man? All of a sudden, he just...
Somebody get him a hard candy.
Right? You know what I mean? He just started tripping. I'm like, what's happening? And Lawrence Fishburne, his demeanor is so solid throughout the film that it makes no sense that he's played for such a dummy. Because he is played for a dummy. Like a straight fool.
Right?
And it's just like, dude, you, I know maybe the subtext is there or maybe that is actual text that he's not a learned man, but you know, he's speaking Shakespeare. So you say you're not a learned man, but you're speaking Shakespeare. So you sound learned to everybody else.
Right.
You sound more learned than me.
Right.
So, and he's a general. He knows tactics.
Yes.
He knows maneuvering.
Yes.
He knows schemes.
Yes.
So that he is played.
Because the shit with him and Desdemona is sketchy.
But I just didn't.
Like when Iago says your wife is sketchy and shady, you have to have set up. She is, like, she's actually shady.
Yes. And it's set up because of what the father says.
Right.
I get that. But considering all the other evidence that the movie gives us to the opposite of her integrity, as well as we're led to believe he feels about her integrity, I still think he just comes off like him.
Because he's not insecure in the relationship with her. Which is why he gotta be an older dude. Well, I'm telling you.
Well, see, I think you can still get away with him being them having that age or the look of that age difference. The problem is, as you first picked out, that you don't believe the Cassio.
Right.
Like, you know, if he's an older dude, yeah, then maybe he's like, oh yeah, this 25-year-old. But if that Cassio is 95 Brad Pitt or the equivalent.
Right.
as they are, it right. still works.
Right.
Because when he dreams and sees her in bed with Cassio, there's not no doubt in my mind. Like, if I'm dreaming that dream, I'm going in that dream like, dog, get the out of here and let me show you how I'm handling this. Look. You know what I mean? Like, it don't make no sense. And he just like go tripping off of that. So, but I still like, it's a sumptuous movie. Oliver Parker, not a historic director. Mm-hmm. I think it's like his directorial debut.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I think for the most part, he makes very smart choices.
Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh, I watched Kenneth Branagh, like, I just like him. I like his acting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Lawrence Fishburne is, I think he's good. I think he's very good in this movie. I think that when he has to play the weak and the meek for that moment, I don't believe it. But then when he has to turn on the menace, that's scary, bro. Yeah. That's a scary bruh. Yeah. I was like, yo, Dez, run, chick. Yeah. Like, run, chick, run. So I ended on liking it. I don't know the actress's name, but the woman that plays Amelia.
I was, go ahead. Go ahead. And then I'm going to agree with whatever it is you're about to say, I think.
Anna Patrick?
Mm-hmm.
I think she is one of the like slept on people in this movie.
Dude.
She is so good.
Dude, again, I think Iago's motivation, where you know, again, the main motivation is I was slighted. But there's this kind of subplot where he wonders, did Othello sleep with my wife?
Now, just to be let it be said, that's a subplot of the play. Because it's nowhere in the movie.
He does. He 100%.
Where is it in the movie?
When he and Rodrigo have the first exchange, and he says that he slept, he picked Cassio over me. His next line is, and I also suspect he has kept company with my, in my home.
Oh, okay. Yes, right. yes. Okay.
But you missing that is not you. You like, oh, well, Lin wasn't paying attention. They don't really
hit it again.
And part of the reason that it's easy to miss is, and I've seen different interpretations. I've seen some interpretations where, you know, Iago is crazy. And maybe he's kind of half imagining things.
Okay.
And you know, it's like, you know, part of the subtext is he didn't pick Iago because
of this.
And Iago is a guy has a little instability to him. But then I've seen other interpretations where, again, I'm going to keep harping on this. The relationship between these two people is built on real nasty ground. And as much as we talk about Desdemona, or as much as I talk about Desdemona not being honest and being shady, and she lies to her daddy, so she'll lie to you, Othello is not an honorable, like again, Othello, this is Othello's boy, basically. Like, you my dude, and I'm coming over to your house, and we're sharing drinks, and then I done ran off with your daughter. And you find out about it in the middle of the night. After we didn't got married. So I've seen some interpretations, and I kind of want it in here because, like you, I thought she was really, really good. Where I wanted some energy between Othello and Amelia. They have one or two moments together where I was like, I would have liked some energy between, because I 100% agree with you that she's not utilized as well as she should. You mentioned Iago breaking the fourth wall and talking directly to the audience. One of the things that I've always loved about, he's my favorite Shakespearean villain, because everyone should have a favorite Shakespearean villain. And what I love about him is he's so transgressive. Like, he's actually bigger than the play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has this great speech where he talks about being a villain
And what does that mean?
Yes.
You know, as you said, throughout the film, and the film is reflective from the play, he talks to the audience and has these monologues. And I don't want to say only, because I don't, you know, I didn't look up all. He's one of the few Shakespearean villains that doesn't die on stage.
Oh, okay.
Like, they take him away. Like, when he says, "I will speak no more," basically, all this is what you need to know about me. They take him away, but he doesn't die on stage, which is somebody who throughout the play has basically all but said, "I know I'm in a play." He's immortal because he never dies as far as we see him. So, you know, like you said, Kenneth Branagh is who should be playing this character. And it's solid. It's solid. I think, you know, I have to say appropriately enough, as we're going to watch something in a few weeks, there have been better adaptations of Shakespeare since this, which make, you know, I don't think this is aged as well, because superior sort of adaptations have come out, including what we'll watch in a couple of weeks when we do the tragedy of Macbeth.
Okay.
Which, you know, the irony is you have another black king, a black lead, black male lead and white female lead who are married, but they work together in a very different way. But yeah.
Yeah. So would you recommend that people see Othello?
I would. I would. I really would. If you've never seen Othello on stage, I think this is a good introduction to the story. And if you have seen it on stage, I think Kenneth Branagh is very good.
Okay.
I think Lawrence Fishburne looks great. I think Lawrence Fishburne is solid, but I think he looks fantastic. So, the sets, the design, I love something that they put a little piece of money in.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So I would recommend it. And you?
Yeah. You should see Othello. Good movie. All right. I am on borrowed time. Before we tell you what we're going to be reviewing next week, ladies and gentlemen, I invite you to send your thoughts, email them to the Michaux Mission at michauxmission@gmail.com, michauxmission@gmail.com. You can like and follow the Michaux Mission on all the social medias of your choice, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it, Facebook, at Michaux Mission. Subscribe to the Michaux Mission at Michaux Mission on YouTube. You can hit the bell and find out when we're going to go live and when we're going to put up our shorts and when we have other videos going on and specials and all that type of stuff. You can subscribe to the Michaux Mission wherever you find podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Pandora, every place, mm-hmm. Amazon Music. Mm-hmm. If they've got podcasts, they've got the Michaux Mission. Check it out. Michaux Mission is a proud member of The Podglomerate, thepodglomerate.com. They make podcasts work, and our podcast works right out of Yonk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace. Go to thevideocontentfactory.com and book your time at one of the fabulous studios that I have not sneezed at. Mm. All right. That's it. Good. Next week, here.
Sure, you won't talk about we'll talk about like that backdoor pilot for Grady that Whitman Mayo did. It was like Joe Morton and Roseanne Caton and little bit Todd Bridges. Like, we were talking about child actors. You don't want to talk about that? Like the backdoor
next week on the Michaux Mission.
Grady. You want to talk about
ladies
that?
And gentlemen, we're going to have a very special guest.
You want to talk about the Milli Vanilli documentary?
Lavetta Cannon.
You want to talk about that?
Actor and producer will be joining us as she is selected a film that I bet you didn't know was an adaptation of a Shakespeare play.
Yeah, yeah.
Gabrielle Union, LL Cool J from 2003, Deliver Us from Eva.
Yeah.
Which is actually an adaptation of William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. Next week, here on the Michelle Mission. Until then, he's Vincent. I'm Len. The guy behind the board is Dylan. And in parting, we say,
when it's time to meet again.
The Michelle Mission is produced by Len Webb and Vincent Williams and edited by Len Webb, with co-production by Mo Poplar, music by Alexa Gold, and filmed at the Video Content Factory. The Michelle Mission is a proud member of the Podglomerate Podcast Network.